Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, a lot going on in the first half of the show. We'll play our Sling It Forward game. We'll play, we'll do a Baldywood. Got a nice movie review. We'll talk about my appearance on The Doctors. We'll play some of that debate, so to speak. First, I'll tell you about news, too. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. Practice safe online holiday shopping. Only shop websites with URLs that start with HTTPS and have a locked padlock icon to the left of the URL. Don't overshare. No online retailer needs to know your social security number or your date of birth. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives these holidays. You can miss certain identity threats by just monitoring your credit alone and bank statements as well. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your info is being used in their network, they will send you an alert. Protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can help you feel warm and protected this holiday season. Save up to 25% off your first year at LifeLock.com with the promo code Adam. That's 25% off at LifeLock.com. Promo code Adam. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, the creator of the Jerky Boys, Johnny Brennan. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, plus a review of Run in Hooray for Baldywood, and a spirited round of Sling It Forward. And now, what's Bald Brian's favorite holiday decoration? A poinsettia. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No nice. Choice but to get on. Mandate.
It really is.
Yeah, light caseload for Lynch yesterday, evidently. All right, good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Jerky made me think of that.
So we'll talk to Johnny Brennan, the creator, one of the creators of the Jerky Boys. In a second. I don't think he's talking to his partner, and I'm curious about how that works. All right, we got a Baldywood coming. We got lots of stuff to take care of. Hearing a little white noise. Yes. I don't know what that is.
It sounds like a wind. Yeah. Something. Hang on.
Oh, there you go. Yes.
It's coming through the Zoom.
Here, Gina, mute your mic first, and let's see if it's you.
All right.
Well, mute you on Zoom.
Oh, okay. I was going to the control board. Here,
right.
But here we go.
Okay, not you. Brian, how about you try it?
Okay.
Yeah, Brian.
All right, it's Brian.
Oh, really?
Mr. Point Shitter Extraordinaire.
What
shitting
do we think?
The show.
What do we think? I got a window open. I'll close that real quick.
It seems too consistent for a window open. It feels like it's
like
coming through something.
Floor noise.
Floor noise is what they call it?
Yeah.
I read that book. That kid... guy had sex with a melon, I think.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what he was complaining about. All right. We will we'll see if we can sort that out. Brian, I'll give you a minute to work on that. Gene, I'll tell you a story. Please. That I hadn't told in a long time, but I'm trying to, you know, I like to see everything through the lenses of the past and try to figure out how that would manifest itself today. And I was talking on either CarCast or Ace on the House. I can't remember whom I was talking to. But I was talking on CarCast today how when I was a young kid, I lived in Cherry Hill, New Jersey for a number of months. And
you did?
Yeah.
My family in Cherry Hill.
Really?
That's what they say. Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Yeah.
And we went to the Cherry Hill Mall when I was about 6 or 7. And I found a loose $50 bill on the ground.
Right. Yep.
And we then...
Gina's family tells tale of the lost $50 bill.
The missing $50 bill.
Well, it was returned because my mom, even though we were poor, we weren't really proud, but maybe we were poor, proud, and stupid. My mom said, take that $50 and take it to the lost and found. which is $50 was by far the most money I'd seen and would see for another several decades.
Adjusting for inflation and cheapness, that's like $1,000.
Oh, my God. And it's certainly the most – it had to be the most money my mom had seen, too. But we went and dropped it off, the single bill at the Lost and Found, which I had thought at the time, what good is dropping off a bill minus a wallet or purse or something like that? But sure enough, we dropped that bill off, and there it went. And the person at the Lost and Found said, I think that for some reason in my head it was 2 weeks. We'll give you 2 weeks, and if no one claims it, you shall get it. And then I went home, and I started Xing off the days like a prisoner. Like I was really like Pepion. I got a sharp stick and I was carving it into the side of the cave wall I was forced to live in. And I got about 4 or 5 days in, and I was like, I think this $50 is mine.
Looking good.
And by the way, who knows how that would have changed the arc of my life? I could have bought Apple stock or Google stock with that $50 right now, or Uber, and been on the fucking board of directors and a rich man. But I waited and waited, and then it had turned out one day there was a knock on our door. Mm. And we must have given our address to the person at the Lost and Found. And a knock on the door. And it was a middle-aged black woman who may or may have not been dressed in a maid's outfit, but she did announce she was a maid. I don't know if memory just put her in a maid's outfit because she said she was a maid, or she was in her maid's outfit. I think she was, and she'd opened the door, and she said, that was my $50, and I went and claimed it, and now I'm here to give you your reward.
Oh. And she's great.
I know.
That was really nice.
And she gave us, I think she gave me $10, which
she gave you $10.
Me $10, which I promptly had to split with my sister. Yeah. Reason 107 why my parents are shitty is they should have dug into their pocket for the $5. They should have said, look, if you feel like you're left out and your brother got this $10 and it doesn't seem like you're wet in your beak, well, let me give you $5 out of my personal savings. But they did not. And we, in fact, then split the money, which is $50 seemed pretty insane. $10 seemed like pretty good fortune. By the time I got down to $5, I was, I just went to the liquor store and just did a case of pixie sticks in my head. I was done. Maybe.
Kind of blows your theory about buying Apple stock.
I know. I know.
What are you going to do with it?
No, never. I belch one up every once in a while, but
bought Apple juice.
It's hardly a dividend. So, and I thought to myself, what would that ever happen today? Any part of that? Any part of the returning the 50? Any part of the person finding it and coming to
being
our
in
house?
The mall is out right now.
Right.
Being in the mall out, $50 bill. Who cares about a $50 bill?
If it now, was.
Well, yeah. You'd have to make it a sum of money that was equivalent to the 50 back then. You'd have to go
$200 bills, say.
Yeah, something like that. Even though, God, it was probably more if you think about home prices or gasoline or something like that. But either way, a chunk of change from a poor person. Would any of that happen today? And I think probably not. The other weird bygone era thought I had, you guys may be a little too young for, is when we would head to the mall or any place that was public, if there was a public payphone, we would immediately go check the change.
For change.
Go check for change. And I
was the right age in the right era of phones for that. Like you know, mid late 80s, that was a sweet spot for looking for change.
Too.
And I had a recollection of going to the Cherry Hill Mall and meeting at like the food court with some sort of rich uncle I had, but he wasn't a rich uncle. He probably drove a 6-year-old Buick, and for that reason, you know, he was the rich one. Sure. But he was some uncle from like the East Coast, and he was that I don't know, kind of high roller, generous guy. And he said, go check the change slot on the payphone. And, you know, I said, done and done. Like, I hit it on the way in, you know. And he said, go check it again. And I went, okay. And went and checked it. I think there was a dollar bill in there. Ooh, that was a big deal. And
nice.
We knew he put it in there, but that was a real treat. A dollar bill in the change. And I always try to think of, like, I could imagine telling my kids, like, go check the change slot on the payphone. Like,
first of all, what's change?
What's change? Yeah, what's a payphone? Screw yourself, old man.
Germs.
Kids can't even be bought. You know, it's interesting. We talk about money being invisible now, mm-hmm. and how people just sort of spend shit and they don't think about it or whatever. It's invisible to kids too. So if I say to my kids, go outside and clean the yard, I'll give you $10. They go, like, no, thanks.
What are we talking? Venmo, PayPal, Cash App?
Yeah, it just doesn't mean anything. The $10, the $20, like, the cash just doesn't mean anything. Well,
and literally about the cash not meaning anything, I think I've told you this before. When I play store with the little 5-year-old, there's no accounting for giving him cash. He's waiting for me to hand him a card, and he pretends that he slides it and it makes a little noise. You don't go, here's one, two,
right.
One, two, what? Give me a card and I'll go, do do.
All right. Baldy has a Baldywood.
That's right.
And that's for the movie Run. What is the movie? Well, you're going to tell us what the movie Run
I'll
is,
tell you
right?
All about it.
All right.
Hooray for Baldywood. He will tell you if a movie's good. Brian will review the flicks that he's seen up on the big screen or in his Netflix queue. Before you spend bucks, remember his taste sucks. He loved that train wreck piece of shit, Transformers 2. Hooray for Baldywood.
So Run is a new movie. It is. It was supposed to be in theaters on May 8th for Mother's Day, which you'll come to find out is very clever. It got pushed back, obviously, till now. It is a Hulu exclusive. So you have to have a Hulu account or sign up for a 7-day free trial to watch this thing. You'll hear whether or not it's worth it. 2020 film directed by Anish Chaganti. Anish is notable because he directed a movie a couple years ago with John Cho, friend of the show, called Searching. Do you guys remember Searching? It had a theatrical run, a little movie, but it was very well received by the critics.
I don't remember that one.
Searching is the one that takes place entirely, it's ahead of its time, no kidding, with all the Zoom and everything these days. It takes place entirely in front of a computer screen. John Cho, his daughter is missing, and he's going through her social media and contacting her friends, and this is the entire movie. We get John Cho's face.
Mm.
It was really good. It was very good. Came out of nowhere. Didn't say it took the world by storm, but it got a lot of good notices, and he's back. Anish, the director, is back with a movie called Run. Stars Keira Allen. Keira Allen is wheelchair-bound in real life, and she plays a wheelchair-bound person in this movie. She's youngish, probably in the movie she's about 16, 18.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching the movie, like, oh, this girl's really good. I'm like, oh boy, is there going to be some pushback for hiring a normie to, you know, be in the wheelchair, and is it going to be a whole thing? Looked her up. No, she actually uses a wheelchair in real life, and she's a fantastic actress. Sarah Paulson, who we all know from you know, People vs. O.J. Simpson, et cetera, et cetera.
I think it's easier to act in a wheelchair. I don't want to take anything away from it, but
how's that?
Not as much business to do.
I've done some acting, and one of the harder things to do that you don't notice until you watch the dailies or whatever is, like, when you're standing and talking to somebody, sometimes you sway a little back and forth. You shift to the right.
Yeah,
you shift to the left.
You get up on your heels.
You got to keep track of what's going on below the waist. You know what I mean? Once you get into the chair, check that box. Don't
Before
have to think about
chair,
it.
Check that box.
Pretty much just focus on hips up. You know what I mean?
There you go.
Hips or lips. Yeah. That's what we always should say. Go ahead.
I've changed my opinion about Keira Allen. She's an okay actress, but frankly, not a lot to do.
Right.
90% on Rotten Tomatoes. Mentioned on Hulu. Just 90 minutes long. Is a brisk movie. Gets in and out. Doesn't waste. There's no fat on this steak. This is a lean steak. So Gina, you probably know a lot more about this than either one of us. Can you explain to Adam briefly what Munchausen by proxy is? Basically, approximately what
I'm
it is.
Totally aware of what
I was going to say, he did Loveline for 20 years.
I did Loveline.
I don't have it in my life or my nuclear family. I'm just obsessed with the idea of it. But Munchausen is when you, poison or make yourself sick to get sympathy. Munchausen by proxy is when you do that to another person to get sympathy as their caretaker.
Need to poison them or get them sick. I think
you don't
just
watch the same Lifetime movies
you're
as
probably
I do.
Right. I think you just say they're sick all the time. Just make it up. That's what I would do.
It's more dramatic, obviously, for the purposes of the movie that, you keep someone sick or you, induce some sickness in order to, for whatever reason. I don't want to get too much into it, but basically you have this girl played by Keira Allen. She's a senior in high school. She's homeschooled, and her mother is very, very overprotective. She has myriad health problems from being a preemie, and she has asthma, and she can't obviously have them in the wheelchair, and she just takes all these medications. The mom controls her life out of necessity, supposedly, and the girl wants to go off to college, but as you can imagine, the mom's not really in favor of that. The young girl, Keira Allen, comes to suspect that maybe her mom is keeping her in this state. Mm. She finds some strange medication with a strange name on it. The clues start to emerge.
I kind of remember this story. I, by the way, do not have that. I'm stricken with what I call Loungehausen by proxy, which is my kids come in and go, I got a sore throat. Rub some dirt on it. No reason to head into the ER. That's going to be a wait and a lot of paperwork. Sorry.
So barely any contact with the outside world. Mom turns the internet off. She can't. It's actually living in a little North Korea. And as she starts to sort of figure some things out, some things seem kind of hinky.
She's not in North Korea, but it's...
She's not in.
Right.
Yeah, she's
out of Washington. She creates that. Yeah. Right.
Yes,
right,
correct. Right. Okay. And as things start to emerge, we get a bit of a cat and mouse situation because they're pretty much in the house the whole time. It's a really solid thriller. I'm going to play. I don't want to get any clip I can find was just going to give too much away. You know what I mean? So I'm going to play the literal cold opening to the movie. This is how the movie starts. It's an audacious opening because I'm like, holy shit, where are we going from here? But we'll pick it up from the opening credit or from the opening. Lionsgate Presents.
Mm-hmm.
Hospital room, doctors everywhere.
Oh, wow. Right. Is this a horror movie?
No, straight thriller.
Straight thriller.
Come on, baby. Come on.
It's a very tiny baby. Oh. Cut to Sarah Paulson in the in a hospital bed.
Mm-hmm.
And into frame comes a wheelchair. What a great opening. Right away, you're like, I need to know more. What is going on?
Mm-hmm.
I differentiate horror, which is usually a lot of gore and a lot of, shock value stuff, mm-hmm. with thriller. This, dare I say, this is Hitchcockian. Like, it's a very, for 90 minutes, it's a very slow burn, and there's a lot of visual stuff. Like, this is M. Night Shyamalan at its best, on his best day. Like, there's this one great shot, I'll try and describe it to you, where Sarah Paulson is at a support group for homeschool mothers, and they're talking about their kids graduating or leaving the nest or whatever, and obviously this is an emotional moment, and there's this great shot where they're passing around a Kleenex box for the tears or whatever, mm-hmm. and the camera's following the Kleenex box. It's cutting off all the people at the head, but it's following the Kleenex box throughout the room. It's a fantastic shot.
I can't wait to watch this.
It's a solid thriller. It's probably rated... Well, actually, Chris, can someone look up what it's rated? I wouldn't be shocked if it was PG-13. It's not gory. It's not gross. It's tight. It's 90 minutes. It's solid. I stand by it. Great visual style. There's a little bit of Hitchcock in there.
Yeah, and it's PG-13.
PG-13. What would you give it on a Rotten Tomatoes score?
Oh, this is a deserving 90% plus. I have it like 95%.
Wow.
There's very little fat and very little to quibble with. There's a tiny bit of like, oh, come on. But that's overwhelmed by the tightness of the script.
And where do we find it?
exclusively on Hulu. So you Hulu subscribers, check it out. And anyone who wants to do like a free trial, you know, can watch it for a week.
All right, let's bring it home.
It's a good movie. Check it out.
Hooray for Bollywood.
All right, we're going to play the Sling It Forward game. Sling has a TV, and it's a, well, it's TV at its best. Shows, TV shows, movies, show you all the great viewing options, and you can find it all at Sling TV. So let's play the Sling It Forward game. Dawson's going to give us some movie descriptions minus the names of the actors, and we'll compete to guess the movie. We got an intro, Dawson?
It's time to play Sling It Forward, the game that's suspiciously familiar. Brought to you by Sling TV.
Did I win this last one drunk in Florida? Who won this one? Who won
play
the last
forward?
One? Did we play this?
We did. No, we did play it in Florida.
Oh.
We played it with Dunham.
Yeah, we played it with Jeff Dunham.
You played it with Teresa.
Oh, yeah.
Dunham, that. Teresa, you, and Brian.
Did I win?
Yeah,
you
won. Unofficial game.
Yeah.
Pete won.
Exhibition game.
Pete won, yeah. I need a few belts. It evidently loosens me up, frees my brain, man.
All right, first to five wins. Adam will be playing as Pete. After a woman leaves a briefcase at the airport terminal, a limo driver.
Brian.
Brian?
Yeah, this is so weird when they start these descriptions. It's Dumb and Dumber. That is a small part of the plot.
Oh, wow. My God.
From 1994.
That is so funny. Wow, that was excellent, Brian.
It's like the Usual Suspects, like a shootout on a boat. Like, yeah, right. that does happen.
Right before the show, Brian and I were talking about all the really popular movies I refuse to see. I've never seen Dumb and Dumber, and I'm constantly being begged to watch it, and I've never seen it. So,
maybe the people who write the descriptions are just super lazy.
And so watches
whatever happened in the first 8 minutes. So, like, as the credits roll, we find the Screen Gems logo on the front. Yeah, okay. Watch the whole fucking movie and give us a description of the movie. Yes.
Italian wedding, The Godfather.
That's right. Sorry.
A former Roman general sets out, Brian.
This is Gladiator.
From 2000, this is Gladiator.
Brian's back.
I've been hating this so far.
Mm-hmm.
When a sports agent.
Gina.
Gina.
McGuire. Jerry Maguire. I've never seen it.
From 1996, Jerry Maguire.
You've never seen it?
I haven't seen it. Tobey Maguire.
In a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Oh, boy.
A woman.
Pete. Road Warrior. Funky Road.
Gina.
Fury Road.
Mad Max Fury Road.
Mm. What's her name? Omarosa?
Furiosa.
Furiosa.
Thank you. I think Funky Road should give me like half of it. It's a good name. It's a good wrestling
what'd you
name.
Take me too. Funky Road.
It's a good name for a black wrestler.
Three friends attempt to recapture their glory days by opening up a fraternity.
Brian. That's old school.
From 2003.
Mm.
That's a really good comedy.
Come on, Pete.
A secret government agency recruits some of the most dangerous incarcerate, Brian.
Pete.
This was not a good movie, but I'll say, Justice League. The God damn, what was the one with Will Smith? Suicide Squad.
From 2016.
Wow.
It is Suicide Squad.
That is
good. These movies are all so fucking generic. So friggin' generic.
I know.
They just blend together.
Brian's got four. Gina's got two.
Oh, boy.
Pete is about to come out of his shell.
Get the man a cocktail.
I know.
Seriously.
A longtime thief planning his next job tries to balance his feelings for Brian.
Oh, shoot. Man, I think we just did this one, but I'm going to say Heat.
For a bank manager connected to an earlier heist.
The Town.
On the board from 2010.
Yes, watch this.
I thought about Heat, too, but then I also remember we just did Heat.
We just did that one, I know.
Right.
That's a good movie, too.
I love the Town.
A father vows to get his son a Turbo Man action figure.
Brian. Jingle All the Way?
Pete. From 1996.
God damn it, I knew that one, too.
Jingle All the
Way.
Wow,
Brian.
Why would you have known that one?
I took a guess. It could have been the Santa Claus for all I know.
Is that the Schwarzenegger movie?
Yeah, I think him and Sinbad.
All right, outro.
Sling
yeah.
It Forward. Brought to you by Sling TV.
Make the smart choice. Switch to Sling TV and get the best cable for the best price. Easy to switch and save. And learn more at sling.com/Adam. Let's see. I was on the show The Doctors last week. I remember specifically because my mom was pissed because she wanted to know why I didn't tell her I was on The Doctors. And then
I thought she was pissed when she saw you on The Doctors.
I'm trying to watch my show. God damn it.
You've ruined it. You've tainted my programming. I was like, well, I didn't know when The Doctors. My answer was always, yeah, I didn't know when it aired, so I couldn't tell you. And you should have went to a fucking Pee Wee football game once in your life, bitch. That's the subtext. That's the subtext of that. But I told Max Zapata to go ahead and whack up a couple of. What do you got? A couple clips there?
Yeah, this is like a little super cut. The entire interview is about 15 minutes long. If anybody wants to check it out online, but here's
it was from Dr. Ian Smith, who did a pretty good job.
You know, I agree about social media. It's doing a lot for a lot of people. And you also, by the way, you post controversial tweets, which, and you're a comedian, and you talk about it. This is one that stuck out. And since with The Doctors, I want to point out this. You said, quote, turns out the people dying from COVID are old or sick or both. How many of you bleeps got played, and who's going to get played next time? What exactly were you trying to say there?
Exactly what I said. Exactly what I mean.
So only
it's all there.
Only old and sick people are dying from COVID?
Overwhelmingly. I mean, I don't want to play the outlier game with everyone. Everyone plays the outlier game now. It's like the death of math. Like, what about the 14-year-old from New Brunswick? Fine. I give you that. It's old people and people with pre-existing conditions.
But aren't they value? I mean, geez, my goodness. This, you know, to me, regardless of your age or pre-existing condition, you have a life. You got one life. No. I want you to live. I don't want you dying prematurely.
I'm with you. But don't sell it to us like healthy people need to be locked down. They kept the information. They didn't give us information about old people and pre-existing conditions. We didn't get that early on. It was just lock it down. It's killing this many people. But they wouldn't give us ages. Of course, there's a huge difference between an old person dying and a young person dying.
Sure.
I never said this thing didn't kill people. I didn't say it wasn't dangerous or insidious or anything like that. What I'm saying is give us perspective on it. And yes, you should act differently depending on your situation. I'm in a low-risk zone myself, and my home is filled with low-risk people. So I act differently than my friend does with his 90-year-old mother.
Sure, yeah. No, I agree with you in the fact that the media has not done a great job in really presenting COVID in its full. I'll be honest with you. And I do believe that there's some of that. It's about kind of eyeballs. It's about ratings. We do not disagree about that whatsoever.
Well, anyone who gets it should avail themselves of whatever the best they can get. I mean, obviously, I don't want any lists or death panels. If you got it, get to the nearest hospital or take the medications, number one. Number two, the thing about, you know, who we're putting in danger and who we're not putting in danger. I mean, there's been a lot of studies on masks. There's been a lot of studies on crowds. There's been a lot of studies on outdoors versus indoors. For me, I live in California. 3 months ago, they were telling us we could walk on the beach, but we couldn't lay down on the beach. They closed all the parks. Think about all those kids who live in those sort of congested areas, who live in these crappy apartments with all the sort of sprawling asphalt and concrete. The only thing they have is a basketball hoop and a merry-go-round in a park. Why did we close the parks? Why did we have to shut down the parks? Kids play at the parks. It's outdoors. It's proven to be, if not safe, not dangerous. Why did we close the beaches? That's what I'm pushing back against. A crazy overreach.
Yeah, but can I just say something? Doctors and scientists do not know the full extent of this virus. It's called a novel coronavirus, a new coronavirus. Doctors are learning on the fly, and doctors have been honest and said, we don't have all the answers. We're going with the best science that we have with what we know at the current time. It may change next week, but the public has to allow us as professionals to be able to read the data, accept new data, and be able to make changes without people saying, oh, you guys know nothing. You said this last week. Now you're saying this week. This is how it works. This is science.
I agree, but not lying down on the beach is not science. Well, everyone knew the answer to that. The parks as well. Gavin Newsom just had a big party out here with a bunch of different families, okay? So shall we listen to Gavin Newsom? Because he's just following the science, except for not for him.
Well, so that's how debates, discussions are supposed to work. You turn on the fucking TV now, it's just one network where everyone agrees with each other and another network where everyone agrees with each other.
Or their disagreement is just a bunch of shouting and shouting over each other, and there's no exchange of ideas. It's refreshing to see an actual exchange of ideas on daytime TV of all things.
Absolutely. I was thinking that the entire time, that whatever you walk away with after you watch that, you've got to feel grateful that you saw such a great discourse between two intelligent people.
Yeah, well, we had about a 15-minute conversation. That's kind of how it went, but it was fine. You know, he challenged me on a couple things. I challenged him on a couple things. And if you watched it, then you would actually get both sides of the story, and then you could reach a conclusion.
But and you know what? one word that both of you used that you never hear in a debate is agreed.
Right. Yeah.
Which was just wonderful.
Yeah. We have gotten, as I think about it, we have gotten away from debates. I'd never given this much thought. But when I grew up and beyond when I grew up, every Sunday news show was, we got three guys from this side or two guys from this side and two guys from the other side, and we just put them together and we'll throw out these subjects, you know. Mm-hmm. Or there would be debates. People would have debates. People would debate Jordan Peterson or Ben Shapiro or Dennis Prager, whom, by the way, are more than happy to debate at any time. But for some reason, the debate went away.
You literally go to the front of the line in those cases, right?
Yes. If you ever listen to Prager's radio show, he constantly punches up Prager or Ben Shapiro's like, I want to talk to everyone who disagrees with me. Now, I have a theory, and my theory is maybe a little self-serving, but here it goes. The conservative people I know are all for the debate. The left-wingers don't want the debate anymore. They're the ones who are not agreeing to do the debate. And the reason, it used to be easy because the progressives had a thought about the environment. And so you'd have a debate, and the debate would be, should we make CAFE standards for cars? Should the average American car by the year 2000 and the fleet for Ford or Chevy, GM, whatever, should that fleet 20 miles a gallon or better? And then the guys on the right would go, oh, that's going to crush the automotive industry and it's going to put a lot of people out of work. And then you'd make the debate, because the debate would be, well, what about the environment? And what about the future? And what about the air? And what about the kids? And that's fine. The problem, and I think the reason a lot of these guys don't want to debate Ben Shapiro or whomever, is because their notions have gotten so fucking kooky and so insane that you can't really defend them. You can only echo them. You have to have a group of people around you. So you can have fun convincing Larry Elder that we live in a society that's systemically racist. And if you'd like to debate him, he'll debate you, but you don't want to debate him because that's tougher. The arguments of the past that were right left but weren't kooky were sort of more minimum wage or taxes or environment. And that's a pretty, you can pick your side of that and make your points. It's hard to pick the right side of, you know, there's 50 different pronouns for every person that was born with either male or female genitalia. As it gets kookier, I think the debates fall by the wayside. Mm-hmm. Because it's not,
The inherent problem with debates, at least nationally, or, you know, primary debates or presidential or even governor, et cetera, they become such theater. You know what I mean?
Yes.
All anyone cares about is landing that haymaker, that gotcha line that's going to get replayed. There's no exchange of ideas.
No.
There's no, you know.
I don't even think of those, like the presidential debates and things like that. I don't even really think of those as debates. I think of that as just each side sort of showing off. Mm-hmm. I think, but
it's like a pose off in a weightlifting competition. It's like, what is this?
But the old way they would do it is to get someone from that side and someone from that side, get a fair-minded moderator to sort of keep track of things, and then we would have a debate. Now, I wish there was more of that, but there isn't. And everyone is off in their own corners. You know, Mark Garagos, Dr. Drew, Adam Carolla will never be on CNN again. Never again. No discussions. We're not welcome. There's no NPR. I did an NPR show, and they fucking deep-sixed it. They fucking lied and just threw it away. I did an hour-long interview on NPR, 7 years ago, and the fucking guy just lied and threw it away.
Yeah, because they didn't do the research and
right.
They would have looked stupid.
Well, they tried for that gotcha moment.
Yeah.
They tried for the gotcha moment, which, again, probably not. When you're interviewing an author for your show on NPR, maybe you shouldn't preload a gotcha moment. Maybe you should just interview the author of the book.
See where it goes.
That's a novel. That's novel. And then they just fucking lied. They literally said we can't air it because we're doing fundraising, and then they threw it away. Okay,
I would have paid. NPR. Talk about fundraising. I would have paid any amount of money to see that special. I would have given $50 to fundraise for that, to see that, to hear it.
The doctor's show though showed up. The guy had his talking points. That was fine, and then we went back and forth. And at the end, I got an email from them going, "The doctors loved it. That was kick ass. Let's have you back again." So let's do that, and let's hopefully evolve. Although we already evolved to that place, we just devolved over the last few years, and now maybe we can claw our way back. All right, let's see. We got the news coming. Should we take a break and come back and do the news right after this?
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Break. Viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Give news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, Adam, you wanted cities to rise up, and looks like we've broken the seal with Beverly Hills. The Beverly Hills City Council unanimously approved a resolution Tuesday night opposing LA County's ban on outdoor dining. And the city's resolution demands a motion be placed on the agenda for December 8th to repeal it, citing a detrimental impact on local businesses and lack of scientific evidence. However, the city will comply up until then, until there's a vote. The city council also directed its staff to look into creating its own city health department so it doesn't have to do what LA County says, like Pasadena and Long Beach. And tons of cities are trying to do that now, Whittier, other ones.
I think everyone has figured out that the LA City Council is a bunch of fucking retards, and Newsom's an asshole, and Garcetti's fucking worthless. And now everyone's just going to create their own health council so they can veto whatever the mandate the assholes put down on whatever the next event is. And that's going to be part of our new world order, is just breaking up into smaller groups so that they can stay open. I walked through Beverly Hills a couple of weeks back. Took Natalia out for dinner, and that place was bustling. I mean, everyone was out in the sidewalk with their dividers up, but it was bustling, that place. And you know, we talk about how this would impact the servers and the tips and the back and the folks in the kitchen and how and the owners and the landlords and the business. we're constantly talking about that. But for many, many people, going out to dinner is a real pleasure. Like, oh, yeah. it is in a time when people are cooped up and there's not that much to look forward to and everyone's kind of trapped with their kids. Going out for a meal is that's circled on the calendar.
That's awesome.
Yes, Brian.
Oh, to your point, Chris and I were just talking about how much our lives have changed over the last year. And we're like, I theorized, and I don't think I was off by much. I'm like, we went out 50 out of 52 weekends a year. You know what I mean? Just for either a casual dinner or an occasion or whatever. Like, that was our time away from Tessa. That was adult time, time to reconnect. And it's like, yeah, we haven't done that in a year.
Right. And I, although I'm going to meet Drew in Pasadena tomorrow for steak, but those things, like those groups, get a group of people together, go to Morton's, sit in our, you know, I have a booth at Morton's. Doesn't have my name on it, but that's the one they give me. And I would go there every 3 weeks and meet Kevin Hanch for wonderful conversations and very interesting and laughing, you know, and exchanging of ideas. And going out to dinner as you get older, you know, when you're young, you go, well, we want to play laser tag or something like that, but paintball or something. But the older I get, if you ask me what is my favorite thing to do, it is go out to dinner with people I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And pulling that off the table, again, it's bad for the servers, it's bad for the owners, it's bad for the busboys, but it's really bad for the people who now can't go anywhere. Like, yeah. I was like, I had this thought, like my I had this thought yesterday, which is my kids were in Florida for Thanksgiving, and then they come back and seen him for a while. I went out and hung out with Sonny for a while. But I said to my daughter, I said, let's go out. Let's go out and do something. Let's go. And then, as I was saying, like, let's me and you go out on another date and we'll go out to dinner somewhere. And I was thinking, oh, we can't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. There's no place to go.
Yeah.
And then you start thinking about, well, then I'll get some tacos and we'll eat them on the porch or something. And it just doesn't sound like what it was. You know, she picked out the restaurant she wanted to go to and blah, blah, blah. So,
and some of the best stuff doesn't travel well. Like, you and I love steaks. Getting the steak delivered to your house, it's been cooked for 30 minutes. So yeah. It's done being, you know what I mean? The travel time.
That's, yeah. Then you kind of get into that mode of like, do I zap it in the microwave for 30 seconds? Like, do I reheat it? Like, but also, since it's not based on any science, then why not just move on to wherever it is you don't want us to go?
That's where we're at. And you want to destroy female friendships at lightning speed? Cancel brunch. Because
oh
I haven't seen my girlfriends in a long time. And that's the one time you knew you were going to be able to see everybody and reconnect. And, you know, for someone like me who is actually incredibly introverted and does not see people very often, it's like I can hit them all in one fell swoop. I don't need to do a coffee with this person, a phone call with this person. I don't like doing that. So this is a tough on female friendships as well.
No, I remember when you were talking about going to the all nude swingers party at the warehouse. So you're explaining to everyone, I'm so introverted that I'm going to keep one pasty on.
I know you think you're being hilarious.
I do.
But if you remember my story, I was the wet blanket of the entire airplane hangar.
Guys, water on the boner. I'm extroverted.
Most severe introverts don't go to swingers warehouse parties in the in Upland in general. But I get your point.
But people don't think of me that way, but I really don't like to go out. I get depressed when I think that there's like a party coming up and you just got to get through it, but I end up having fun. But it's not, but brunch is the exception. It has a set ending time, which is very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And those days are over for now. We do have some good news, some breaking good news that I hope I'm springing on you, though. If you've been on the computer at all, you've probably already seen it. Airlines don't have to treat emotional support animals as service animals anymore.
Oh my God, this must have been Adam's most tweeted story.
I was going to say, I'm sure you've seen it. The U.S. Department of Transportation ruled Wednesday that carriers are not required to recognize emotional support animals as service animals and may treat them as pets. Air carriers are also permitted to limit service animals to dogs. Very important. CNN reports that flying with a small pet inside the cabin can cost $125 or more each way for the airline.
Well, this will be the end of it. All the people who couldn't fly without their dogs, go ahead and charge $125 for Bowser, and now...
And they're going to be magically cured.
They'll be magically gone. Yeah, it's fucking... Here's the whole thing and what I've realized and why I've been shouting from the mountaintop about this shit for a decade now, which is... flying with the dogs, it's kind of the same as the homeless thing, which is, look, just leave them alone. Let them make the right decision. Sadly, we're at a place now, maybe it's the lack of religion, or maybe it's just the lack of personal dignity, or maybe it's the fact that character has gone by the wayside. No more leaving people alone and letting them make the right decision when it comes to living for free. In Venice Beach in a camper or flying for free with your dog. I do think, and I have seen, in something like mask mandates and that kind of stuff, every person I see is wearing a mask in my neighborhood. People walking alone, walking their dog at night, like Sonny and I were out walking Phil last night. Someone was walking down the street at 9 at night just alone. Wow. They had a mask on. Of course, Sonny and I didn't, but... all the other stooges did. The Trader Joe's. Everyone just does that. There's a social contract. You shall be shamed, and you need to put that mask on. And people will comply with that if there's shame. See, we all wanted to get rid of shame. Remember that? Well, don't shame that person. Or don't shame that. It was a lot of shame. A lot of shame talk. Well, now you want them to wear fucking masks, and shame is back, and it's pretty fucking effective. I mean, if you minus the shame, the societal shame part of masks, and you just treat it like parking tickets, you know, or parking, you go, well, there's no shame in having your tire in the red zone. Right. But you could get a ticket. But fine. I'm just going to run into the salon and I'll come back. Like, people would chance it. The shame, the societal shame is by the way. It's like having 700 million meter maids. You know what I mean? Like, it is so pervasive. And it works. It works. It works really well. Everyone's wearing a mask. And it works so fucking well that people walk alone on the horse trail at night and wear the fucking mask. I see people riding their mountain bikes, you know, where everybody but me is wearing a mask when they take a hike, because I'm not a fucking stooge. Like, I'm alone. It's hot outside and we're just taking a fucking walk, or I'm walking with my son at night. There's nobody around. But sure enough, everyone is wearing that goddamn mask. Now, if we had some fucking shame, like I was trying to create about these fake service animals, then we could have shamed people. But it didn't work. We didn't shame the first wave of pioneer pussies and cheapskates who want to travel for free with their fucking dog and didn't give a shit about what anyone else on the plane thought. And then that created a next wave and a third wave. And now we're at the 27th wave. And at some point, we have to get involved now because it's out of control.
I do like your Frontiersman strip club name, though.
Yeah, Pioneer Pussy.
Pioneer Pussy.
Pioneer Pussy. That's right. Best fried chicken in the land. Hey, everybody. My name's Pete. Pioneer Pete. Not the name I use when I play games that I get smeared in on Amper. Hey, Pete. Hey, we got a large, tasty bucket of hotness coming up named Cheyenne. She's finger-licking good. I go extra crispy on her ass. Don't forget to get the cottage-cut fries on there and a side of slaw. And not that bullshit slaw with the fucking golden raisins and the currants and the pieces of green apple. We go old slaw, the way the colonel used to say it. And let me tell you something else about the colonel. He said something else at a meeting once when he was using a... What's that? Okay, I'll keep it clean. All right, Jade, stage seven. Counter seven, Jade. Counter seven. All right. I'm just going to get back in my covered wagon and have myself a nice bowl of finger-licking good pussy. buddy. Quit your grinning and drop your wet naps. Sorry.
Speaking of the loss, she's my cherry pie post.
Speaking of the lack of shame, do you think there'll be a pushback on this animal ban, or will the people just have a little dignity and say, "Eh, we got a good run. We got 10 good years of not paying the fees out of this."
Every person I know who does it knows they're getting away with something.
That's what I'm saying. They do this kind of like, had a good run.
It's like pushing back after you've created, after you've been involved with like unemployment fraud or something. It's like, all right, I had a good run, hammered a few checks, but then I got caught. So
I'm not going to push the issue.
I'm hoping. All right, let me hit relief ban. This thing's a real product. You get nausea. There's nothing worse than nausea. I've been drinking too much, or morning sickness, or maybe got a touch of the COVID. Relief Band. It's the number one FDA-cleared anti-nausea wristband, clinically proven to relieve nausea and vomiting from motion sickness, morning sickness, chemotherapy, anxiety, hangovers, migraines, and more. 100% drug-free, non-drowsy, fast-acting, all-natural relief with zero side effects. Originally developed 20 years ago in hospitals. And now you can get it over-the-counter. Relief Band stimulates the nerve on your wrist that goes right to that part of your brain that controls the nausea and blocks the signal to your stomach telling you you're sick. This thing works. I have used it after a night of celebrating a little too much, and it actually works. So makes a great gift. It's Relief Band, right, Dawson?
This holiday season, helps someone reclaim their life from the fear of nausea. Right now, Relief Band has an exclusive offer just for Adam Carolla listeners. If you go to ReliefBand.com and use promo code Adam, you'll receive 20% off. So head to ReliefBand.com and use promo code Adam for 20% off.
All right, what else, Gina?
Well, there's some more breaking news, actually, that if we need more details, we can look at it further. San Francisco has banned tobacco smoking inside apartments, but don't worry, weed smokers, you can still smoke weed.
Yeah,
they do have a reason for that. It's not super satisfying, but there is a reason for that.
What is it?
So smoking in some places, you can still find a place to smoke cigarettes outside. But since weed smoking outside is illegal, then they would be taking away your complete right to smoke anywhere, to smoke weed. So you're not allowed to smoke cigarettes because you can still find places to smoke them outside. But
tell that to the guy shooting up heroin right now on hate.
I was going to say it's San Francisco. He's fine wherever he is.
Yeah.
That's just more part of the war on cigarettes. And cigarettes, it's kind of it's interesting. It's a well, look, I've seen the commercials. What happens when you smoke in an apartment is you got to be a middle-aged white guy with kind of a scowl on your face. Mm-hmm. And then you just sit alone on your sofa in your apartment and you smoke angry. Smoking angry is when you put your thumb and forefinger and hold it like you're pinching something off. You know, smoking nice is when you wedge it between your fingers.
Right.
Angry smoke is when you hold it tight.
The pinch
move. And that guy sits alone in his apartment, probably a racist, I'm guessing, and he smokes angry. And then what happens to the smoke is the smoke goes into the electrical socket, and then it follows the conduit up. And it goes into the unit above him, which has a little brown baby who's sleeping in a bassinet. And then that baby sucks up all the smoke. And then that kid will never see his 22nd birthday because of secondhand smoke's a firsthand killer.
But right before the smoke goes into the baby's mouth, it turns into like a wavy skull and crossbones.
Yes, that's usually
so
how
we know
it works.
It's bad. Yeah.
Right. So the guy who smokes in the apartment never has a kid, which is weird because it's a straight.
Or if they do, they're estranged.
They're estranged. Right. And the smoking thing is kind of interesting because it is. I always talk about it in my stand up. It's like go smoke in the restaurant, smoke in the smoking section, go smoke at the bar, smoke out on the patio, can't smoke there, go outside, can't smoke out in front of the door, go down the street, can't smoke at the park, can't smoke in your apartment now. And a couple of things. It is an interesting little yardstick to sort of measure our government. Because in a way, smoking is a freedom. Smoking is kind of falls under the heading of, well, it's bad for me, but I choose to do it, so I'll do it, which is, you know, and it's not, I kind of get smoking in restaurants or smoking in bars. I get it. But here's the thing. If you own a restaurant, you should decide whether you want smoking or non-smoking. If you own a bar, that should be your fucking decision. The government shouldn't mandate that. You should say, I'm not going to have smoking in my bar because I have a lot of patrons that don't appreciate it. Or after there's 50 of those, you should have a bar that says people are welcome to smoke here. And if you'd like to smoke and that's your thing and you want to do it in my bar, you may come to my bar. So we should have never let the government take this over. Now, the government is going to just keep going with smoking. If you don't think they're done with smoking, when have they ever stopped? When has there ever been anything that would suggest that the government was going to stop anything about smoking? First off,
they're never satisfied.
Yes, they lied. This whole secondhand smoke thing is just a fucking lie. Those are the experts. Those are the experts lying to you. You know what they're doing? They're lying to you. They lied to you the same way they lied to you about COVID, which is smoking is bad. COVID is bad. We don't want you to get COVID. We don't want you to smoke. How do we get you to do that? Well, if we give you actual statistics about secondhand smoke, that might not slow your roll, because the actual statistics about secondhand smoke are nil. Nobody dies of secondhand smoke. Doesn't exist. So we're going to say 50,000 Americans die every year of secondhand smoke. We will lie to you. The experts will lie. We will get you to curtail this behavior that we don't approve of. And there's so many parallels with that going on with COVID. It's like, we will tell you things. We will get you. We will try to change your behavior. You can argue, well, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe people shouldn't be smoking. Maybe secondhand smoke is bad. But do you want to live in a world where the experts get to lie to you to get you to stop doing stuff? That's the question.
Yeah, there was a better way. Like, it's Machiavellian, you know what I mean? Like, the ends justify the means. Like, mm-hmm. If we can reduce smoking by saying any number of things, is that a noble end result? Yeah, you can debate that, but philosophically, do you want the leaders or experts, whatever you call them, effectively lying to you?
Well, and it's such a short game, too, because now... You think about it.
Yeah, you create a backlash.
Yeah, you go like, oh, experts, what pearls of wisdom do you have now? Mm. Oh, I can walk on the beach, but I can't lay down on a towel. Okay, let me write this down. I don't want to forget it. Oh, we can't eat in the restaurant. We can't eat outside the restaurant. Okay, I'm going to write this down while you eat in a restaurant. Okay, you end up losing your constituency because you've overplayed your hand. Mm. All right, what else, Gina?
So we talked about this last year. Remember the boat, the Conception, that all these sort of family divers were on, doing like a tourist, like stay on the boat overnight and they go scuba diving, and it caught on fire.
Yep.
And almost everybody died. Well, there is an update now to that story. The captain of that dive boat, and it did burn off of Santa Barbara last year, killing 34 people. He was indicted on 34 counts of manslaughter, seaman's manslaughter to be exact. The indictment, which was handed down by a federal grand jury, alleges that this guy, Jerry Boylan, 67 years old, was responsible for the safety and security of the vessel, its crew, and its passengers. And he's expected to give himself up to federal authorities. U.S. Attorney Nick Hanna said in a statement, as a result of the alleged failures of Captain Boylan to follow well-established safety rules, a pleasant holiday dive trip turned into a hellish nightmare as passengers and one crew member found themselves trapped in a fiery bunk room with no means of escape. The three violations include failing to have a roving patrol, failing to conduct sufficient fire drills, and failing to conduct sufficient crew training. And according to the NTSB, rather, the fire started where lithium ion batteries were being charged, but couldn't determine if it was the batteries or the ship's electrical system that started the fire. Mm. Now, he got off and a few other crew members got off, and that was it.
God, could you imagine, you know, these guys get brought up on charges, but before the tragedy, they're just fucking regular working people,
yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a whole bunch of mandates like, hey, every 2 hours, a crew member must walk through the cabin to observe the whatever. And everyone goes, yeah, right. And then everyone has a few beers and goes to bed.
Yep.
Right. I try not to judge because there's so much of this part of life that people just kind of whiff on, you know, like who, how many, you know, I've lived in California my whole life. I've been told 2,000 times to have stuff prepared for an earthquake. You know, when the earthquake hits, we're not going to fucking have anything prepared. All this stuff where you have to, you know, when you live in your home, you guys tell me, you know, you live in your home, you got to have a drill. You got to have like a fire drill. The fire thing goes off. You do it at 2 a.m. We all meet in one spot. We look for the nearest exit, whatever. How many families have done that? Nobody does.
Not this one.
Right. So nobody does it. And I'm sure this guy wasn't a bad guy. He was just that guy, you know.
Yeah.
And at some point, he finds himself, I'm guessing, floating in the water or in a dinghy or rubber raft or something, looking back at his vessel engulfed in flames, and he's doing the math. There's me. There's that crew guy. There's that other crew guy. And then there's 34 people in there. Yeah. And nobody's getting out. I mean, that had to be insanely traumatic. I mean, could you imagine that? And I know we're supposed to be angry at this guy, but it's the kind of thing that just could happen at any time, anywhere, with the sort of perfect storm, pardon the pun, of variables.
Well, and speaking of that, in a way, Brian, you'll probably remember this. It reminded me of the movie The Laundromat that we talked about. I believe it was last year, the Meryl Streep and I think kind of that odd movie, but that's how it started out, just with people on a little accident on a boat.
That's right.
A little boat tour, and a wave came out of nowhere. So many people died, and then trying to figure out who's at fault. Nobody meant to do it, but it happened.
All right. What else we got, Gina?
Let's see here. Well, Snoop Dogg is teaming up with social media app owner Triller co-owner Ryan Kavanaugh to launch a new boxing league called the Fight Club. Kavanaugh dropped the news that the event was the first of what will be many high-profile fights that he and Snoop plan to arrange. Kavanaugh adds that they already have a major fight in the works with some big stars, but of course, we don't know who. One thing he will say, though, is that Snoop will definitely provide the commentary, because during the Tyson fight, I know Snoop was trending hard during that fight. Fight Club will feature both sanctioned and unsanctioned fights like the Tyson Jones fight. Snoop's commentary was a big highlight, so it's going to continue. And in addition to the main event, Fight Club will also schedule some high profile undercards. So this, if we were testing the waters with this latest one, it's a go.
Yeah, there's no more forms of entertainment anymore. There's just entertainment. There's no more Broadway, boxing, or NBA. It's now just it's now just entertainment. You know what I mean?
No Broadway. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's what does the future hold? You know what I mean? Like if when I talk to my son and he's 30, he's like, "Are you going to come by and watch the pay-per-view?" What's going on? Oh, it's Vanna White shitting into Bill Cosby's urn. Oh, that's a thing? Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah.
We all chipped in. We got it.
Vegas has odds on it.
Yeah, Snoop's calling it. Yeah. I mean, that's just where we're heading, right? It's pure freak show now, right?
Yeah.
It's
Idiocracy. Ouch, my balls.
Yes, that's what it is.
TV show.
Related question, when's the last time Snoop rapped?
I don't know.
Well, let's see. He's had a cookbook with Martha Stewart.
Okay.
Right.
You're kind of making my point. Like, is there anyone as famous or more famous than Snoop that is farther away from what they became famous for? Like, Mario Lopez, maybe?
He rapped in the maybe Mario Lopez is going to fight Vin
Mark
Scully.
Yeah.
Mark McGrath.
Yeah.
Mark Roth was a singer, everyone.
He definitely rapped in Katy Perry's like California Girls or whatever.
I think that was 11 years ago.
That was a test and you did not pass, Adam.
I get a free pass because I had a daughter and we used to have dance parties to that song. It's great because they talk about fucking on the beach and stuff. So that's what you want your 4-year-old into.
What's not allowed now in COVID.
He must be.
So he has an album coming out this month, Take It From a G.
Oh, all right.
So and
drop.
He's been releasing an album a year.
Just nobody knows anymore.
Yeah,
right?
His last top 10 album was in 2011.
Yeah,
didn't he change his name to Snoop Lion?
Yeah, makes sense. And he's doing Corona commercials and stuff. Yeah. It's so crazy now because there used to be a taboo. Like, oh, this guy's dropping N-bombs and smoking the weed. Corporate America is not going to get near this guy. Then we've completely gone fuck it with that, too. It's like, whatever, whoever, DJ Khaled, whoever, Snoop, come on down. Come on down.
Well, DJ Khaled's on that list. Much more famous for commercial now than for being a DJ.
He's famous for sitting.
I blame the Kardashians and Dancing with the Stars. Those are the two entities I blame for this new kind of anything goes form of entertainment. Nothing's a bad idea. The freakier, the better. See if you can get that Vanna White, Bill Cosby's urn thing going. Okay. I know some guys at CAA. I think we could underwrite that thing. All right, let me hit Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other. How about you bundle your policies at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. Why not make things easier at Geico? Just go to geico.com, get a free quote today, see just how much you could be saving. All right, let's do one more, Gina Grand.
Hey, well, since we were talking about the future, let's talk about the future. A big-time astronomer named Seth Shostak, who specializes in studying extraterrestrials, says that we will find aliens by the year 2036. And it's interesting how he came to that number. He went so far as to say he will bet everybody on Earth a cup of Starbucks that we'll find something by that time. So according to Shostak, as the processing power of computers tasked to listen to distant signals from the cosmos doubles every 2 years or so, because people are not listening to these signals. They said that would be like one person watching a million television shows at the same time. These are computers listening to these signals. Computers will be able to monitor more and more and more channels on which extraterrestrials might be communicating. And by 2036, the SETI Institute, S-E-T-I, SETI Institute's computers will have improved enough for astronomers to have looked at about a million star systems. And as he says, it's his gut that a million is the right magic number to find something.
Be prepared when they do find that signal from outer space to be wildly underwhelmed. Because we're going to want, like, I am your overlord. You must obey. It's going to be some weird little thing that sounds kind of organic to us and we don't know what it is. It's going to be a cross between like a brook and a ferret or something. And we're going to go, what? That doesn't sound like, oh, it's something. Oh, believe you me.
It's not doo-doo-doo.
Right. It's not. It's going to be anything we can hang our hat on. It's going to be wild. It's going to be big news. Like, hey, we've made contact.
We found a signal.
But the signal's going to be like nothing we've ever heard. It's not even going to sound like anything. And it will not reflect anything that we've ever thought of or any movie we've ever seen.
That's probably for the best.
Probably.
We all think we want it, but, you know, you listen to enough Coast to Coast and everyone should just stay on their own planet.
That's right. Art Bell. All right. Let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad. And that's the news.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Last but not least, Simply Safe. Break-ins on the rise. Simply Safe's having a huge holiday sale. 40% off any system and a free security camera. And get up to 40% off Simply Safe plus free security camera. Do it today. Visit simplysafe.com/Adam. That is simplysafe.com/Adam. All right. I'm going to do a one-on-one with Johnny Brennan, the creator of the Beastie Boys, and we'll do that.
The Jerky Boys.
Oh, sorry. Bull.
That'd be amazing.
Bull. The Jerky Boys.
You love
Boys.
The Jerky Boys way more than the Beastie
That's
Boys.
That's right. Right after this.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.